Oi, oi, I'm Jimmy Bullard, and this is me old muck of Fenners. We're back together, son. How are ya?
Hi, Bully. Great to be back working with you. Well, what are we doing here, though?
We're starting a football club in podcast form. The only thing we know, it's called FC Bullard. After that, it's all up for grabs.
So, we haven't got any players, we haven't got a kit, we haven't got a club badge, we haven't got a stadium.
Correct. FC Bullard. Welcome to the club.
This is a crowd podcast.
George, my floor manager, comes in. I'll never forget this. He goes, "You are finished. You're finished." Like that. Like a Succession or something.
Hi, I'm Joe Marler.
And I am Tom Fordyce.
And this is Things People Do.
Some people do amazing things on this show. We meet zookeepers, politicians, astronauts.
And some people who do other things, like traffic wardens,
removal men,
cattle hoof trimming.
Because everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions.
See, I used to hate people, but this podcast has changed me. And now I can't get enough of people. And the weird and wonderful things they do.
When you have to explain to a grown adult that drink is in fact a liquid and they don't believe you.
What do you think is the most stolen item in a hotel?
Toilet rolls.
Batteries out of the remote.
And we had to excavate 3 skeletons a day.
Today we are live at the Clapham Grand with another episode of Things People Did, where we ask comedians and celebrities all about the jobs they used to do before they were famous. And our guest today is comedian and actor Doc Brown.
And then there's this huge bang and everything goes dark. And I'm like, oh, that's definitely me.
So your first 2 jobs were illegal.
I guess now, yeah, you would say that. And the first question they asked me was, do you consider yourself good looking? And I was like, fuck this place. That's messed up, isn't it?
Welcome to Things People Did. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for our first guest tonight, Doc Brown. Hello.
Hello.
My opening chat is usually say hello to our guests.
Right.
But I'm confused now because I've got here, we met upstairs.
Yes.
And you introduced yourself as Ben.
Yes. That's
but
my
that
name.
Confused me. Yes, but that confused me because I was told we were having Doc Brown on.
Right.
And I need to clarify what you want me to use because Doc Brown...
I mean...
It reminds me of either Doc McStuffins.
Yes.
Anyone know that one?
Big one for my kids when they were little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's got Back to the Future vibes for me.
Yeah. So it's neither of those. When I was... when I was 15, I got the nickname... It is related to Back to the Future because I was a bit of a know-it-all and I was obsessed with those movies. And I don't know how it got retained when I started rapping as a teenager, but it did. I've never been a huge fan of the name, but I think when I first started doing stand-up, because I was rapping whilst I was doing it, I just thought I'll just retain my rap name. But I regret it because I've just been fighting to... use my real name ever since.
So do you want me to go with Ben? Or?
I honestly don't mind because, you know, it's been 30 years I've been using the name, so they're both my name. My mum calls me Doc sometimes.
Does that not confuse you?
No, you get used to it. You might, like, you're a rugby player, right?
Yeah.
You lot, I don't know shit about rugby, by the way, but I'm guessing, like any sport, you must have had a nickname. No? Did you not have a nickname?
Yeah, quite
okay,
a few.
What was your nickname?
Well, quite a few revolve around the C-bomb.
C-bomb.
Yeah.
Wide load.
Wide load. Croissant.
Fridge.
Croissant. Fridge. Oh, I'd quite like fridge.
Was there one that was used regularly enough that if someone shouted it when you're on the pitch...
Quass.
You'd respond, right?
Quass. I'd be like, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, so Joe or Quass. It's the same Quass. Thing. It's the same thing. So if someone says Doc, I'll turn. If someone says Ben, I'll turn.
Welcome to Things People Did,
Thank
Ben.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm a little embarrassed how little I know about rugby. Is that going to be a problem?
Tom, do you want to answer this one on my behalf?
Ben, I wouldn't worry about it in the slightest because today we are going to delve into all the jobs
that you used to do before making it Excellent. In comedy. So you're on safe ground. And I am told that one of your very first jobs was that of a car boot salesman. It says here at the age of 12.
Yes.
Is this in the Victorian period?
Yeah, I guess, you know, back in those days, this is the end of the 80s, turn of the 90s, people were just a bit more, what's the word? They just go out and do stuff for money. The world as I knew it was a little more, it's a bit more of a free-for-all. The way kids could leave the house and then just sort of disappear until sundown. Even though there was no way to track us. It seems quite weird, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
And for me, a big thing was definitely making money. If you're from a working class background in the house, you'll recognize this. There's a lot of talk about money in the house, you know, whereas in some other households, it's like, oh, the school's having a ski trip. Go and get your fucking boots. It's not a conversation. Do you know what I mean? In my house, it was like, how are we doing this? How are we doing that? So you hear it and you think, I should make some money.
And you did that by going to car boots.
Yeah, there was a school in Queen's Park, I say was, it's still there, called Salisbury Primary. It's a sign of the times, actually. Now, on Sundays, in that car park, it's like one of those...
Was it Farmer's Market or
Farmer's
something?
Farmer's Market. I was thinking of the word cunt, and all I could think of was Farmer's Market. Farmer's Market. Yes, it's a Farmer's Market now, but back then, in the 80s, early 90s, it was a car boot sale. My mum's friend Helen had a stall, and sometimes my mum would help out, and sometimes I'd go with her. And then I just looked at it, and there was all sorts of shit being sold at all sorts of different tables, and I just thought, I've got some shit. I actually regret it quite badly. Like, all the Star Wars toys I collected.
Oh, no.
And my chopper bike as well. I sold all of that shit. I made a pretty penny. And then my mum showed me about this company that would sell girls' hair accessories, like scrunchies and, you know, baubles, the little things they put in their hair, like on mass, really cheap. So I invested half the money I made. So I put half of that into buying all this toot and added that to the store, and I just started caking it. Like, I was 12 years old, I had about £150 cash.
And are you spending this money, Ben? Are you being flash with it? Are you reinvesting it?
Well, yeah, I was reeing up on the hair products, and then I was saving the rest. I don't know what for. I just loved having cash just there.
Do you still go to car boot sales
now?
Yeah,
I do. In fact, everything I wear is secondhand at all times. Everything I'm wearing right now is secondhand. It's Timberlands, Edwin jeans. So I only wear secondhand.
Tom, do you go to car boot sales?
There's always something else to do on a Sunday morning. There's a couple of massive ones near me, and it's caused a big stink because there was one that was really well established, as they often are, Ben, aren't they? People know where to go for a good car boot sale.
Go get it early.
Exactly. And then the farmer in the next field set up his own car boot and then stuck his own signs up. So suddenly, if you were heading for this famous car boot, which one were you going to?
So what, like a rival car boot?
A rival
in
one.
In the field next to it?
Yeah. It was big chat in the world of car boots.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
I love a car boot sale.
Best ever purchase?
No. I was mainly selling. I wouldn't go to buy. My wife would get me up at the crack of dawn to go and sell a load of shit. But I did start getting a little bit uncomfortable when I'd turn up in the truck and the bed at the back's open and it's full of all the shit. And you get there at like 5-6 o'clock in the morning. And even before I've parked up, there's people climbing in the back of my truck, like, taking stuff out.
What?
Yeah, going, oh, I want to...
Where was this? Where?
Down on the way to Eastbourne. Is there anyone from...
Yeah.
Ben?
Just saying.
Is there anyone else from Eastbourne around here? Fuck.
They're all busy setting up their car boot sales.
Too busy robbing, aren't they? They're out there robbing, jumping in the back of people's vans.
No, but they would ask, have you got any perfume? You got any perfume? I'm like, no, I haven't got any fucking perfume. What's that for? And it would be for chaps like yourself.
Buying something from a car boot sale to sell on again at another car boot sale.
Yeah, at the same car boot sale.
Yeah, see, that doesn't make any sense.
For double the price.
Well, that makes sense.
There's always a lot of bargaining, Ben, that goes on at a car boot, isn't there? Particularly if you're selling. Even if you're selling a number of items for 10p, there'll always be someone who goes, take 5.
That's very true, and it can be quite annoying, but people are always thinking about how to either save money or make money constantly. It's in the back of everybody's head. But I love it because that feels like something that would have been going on in this country like thousands of years ago. Just constant bartering. It feels like a timeless element of our culture. And then because we're British, we don't like confrontation. So it's a really interesting push and pull. They want to get the item cheaper, but have they got the balls to haggle? And then, of course, that thing with timing also means that at the end of the day, there's going to be more bargains. And that's when people take the most piss.
Mm.
You know, they just like, can I get all of this shit for a pound?
Have you ever tried it like at a supermarket? I know we're quite a polite nation and we don't want that confrontation and stuff like that.
Well, I always add an extra banana. Like, I'll pay for five, but I'm taking six. Fuck you, man.
That'll show the man, won't it?
Yeah. That's the closest I get to the streets, do you know what I mean? To the...
Do you ever do that thing, you know, if you've got to weigh your fruit and veg and then you press the button, do you ever just hover it a bit? So let's say you've got six apples, just hover it on the scales.
No need, no need, because they changed it. So on the self-serve, there's no scale. Maybe there's at some of the shops. I'm just thinking about big say-nos here. I'm quite loyal. I will put, like, maybe push it to seven bananas, and you just put it on and it just asks you how many. Put in five, bruv.
So you're telling me now that if I want to buy like loose apples, I can just go over to the weight of the scales, just put one on, press print the ticket, then bag up 10 apples.
What's stopping you?
The law? You have a problem with that.
You're stealing 9 apples.
Yes, you are. And from a legal point of view, I mean, if we are intending to do the show in April and you're arrested for stealing apples in the meantime, I would have to hold my hand up and say, yes, that is illegal.
Tell you what, I'm fucking doing it. Like, I'm going to get a fucking buzz out of that. Like, I can't wait for that one. Oh, that's good.
They came from the ground. They came from the earth. They're of the universe. They're like umbrellas. They're for everybody. You don't buy them.
Hang on. Just need to make note of my defence.
Your Honour.
They came from the earth. What was it? They're not like umbrellas.
No, they are like umbrellas. You don't buy them. They're for everyone.
Who owns the rain that falls from the sky that grows the apple?
You don't buy umbrellas either.
I've never bought an umbrella in my life.
Where the fuck do you get your umbrellas from?
Bruv, I've got so many fucking umbrellas, right, that I left the studio. I was making some music last week, and Tony, the producer, he texts me. He goes, "Yo, you left your umbrella here." I said, "Bruv, umbrellas are of the world. Enjoy. Stay dry."
I'm not sure.
The umbrellas just appear and am I going nuts here? Do you lot all buy umbrellas? They just appear, right? They appear in your house. You use them occasionally. And you put it back. And then if it goes missing, you're like, fuck it. The next man's enjoying a dry day. That's the way the universe works.
What about in that case? What about the phone charger, Ben? Because some people...
No, the phone charger's fucking different, man. That's different. You know the high-speed little square one that Apple do?
Oh, beauty.
So good. I've had that twice, and it's disappeared within minutes in my house. I know it's one of my kids, but I never find out who it is. It's very annoying. And then you got to use the shit one that you got from the high street, you know? Place that sells vapes and chargers.
8 hours later, 23%.
That's
my nut.
I actually went to one of those shops last week. The vape shop that sold screens, and I wanted a little button for my phone on the back, you know, that thing that hooks on your hand like that. Mm-hmm. 75 quid.
What?
Not for the button. No. So there was the button, and it was an iPad cover that went like for the holder and that lot. And he had loads of fucking vapes as well. It was like, okay, I'll avoid them ones. And then got back, and I was like, 75 quid, that was a bit much, but I needed that for the iPad, really, and I quite wanted that for the phone. It was the wrong size for the iPad. I said no to a receipt. There's no way I'm going back in there. And the fucking hook on the back broke within 2 days. So
you can't trust any establishment that has that level of lack of focus, you know? Like, when I see... A pizza place, it's called La Pizza For You or whatever, and they sell fried chicken, Chinese chow mein, Indian tandoori. I'm like, come, guys, none of these are going to be fucking, none of them are going to be good. Do you see what I'm saying? If that shop is just iPad cover buttons for ex-rugby players. You're like, bang, these guys are fucking know what they're doing. I'm in.
I love how he said ex.
Do you still play? Oh, fuck. I'm so sorry. I thought this is what you do now. Oh, man. I thought this was like a classic thing, like, you know, people retire and then they do podcasts. You're still playing.
Be honest, Ben.
It's the shorts. This makes more sense now.
To be fair, I have actually retired twice before, so it's not your
fault.
You're
on the Michael Jordan Last Dance trail.
Well, it's funny you should mention Michael Jordan, because we need to talk about your high tops, Joe.
Only briefly.
Because you are obsessed with Air Jordans, and you've got a mate who does things with your Air Jordans, and he has given you a pair that were in tribute to the great Chicago Bulls team, the triumvirate of Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and Dennis Rodman. But in place of those three, he put on your Air Jordans.
He paints my shoes and that, like whatever design.
Who's this guy?
This guy, he's called Nick, right. And he's got like a shoe painting
business.
Yeah, so.
And a bit of pizza and some vapes.
Very specific to the shoes. And I said, I want some Last Dance trainers done mixed with England rugby. And he was like, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, cool. I said, I want Danny Kerr, me and Dan Cole, like three old lads,
okay.
On one. And he said, who do you want on the other? And I went, well, Rodman, Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan. Yeah. And he turned around and was like, are you sure, like, you want them three from the Chicago Bulls to sort of represent you three? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, which one of you fuckers is Jordan?
Right, yeah.
And that was what he kept going. They're three of the greatest basketball players ever to play the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, maybe you're right. can we get Steve Kerr?
Nice.
What was it, Kukic?
Tony Kukic, yeah.
Tony Kukic. Maybe the...
Luke Longley?
No one would know that, so I had to get these done. And
it's quite niche to just the front row,
aren't they?
If you're on the front row, you can see Joe's trainers. If you're a few rows back, you're now looking at Joe's ass.
Oh, so you did get Jordan, Pippen and Rodman?
Yeah. On that, just to represent us, you know, the three talisman of the rugby team. That's what yeah. Former thing. And then we got, there's always a choice on the thing. That's yeah, my yeah. like no, mantra.
They're very sick, to
Thank
be fair.
You.
The thing that I have linked to rugby, I suppose, is I once taught Nigel Owens a Big L verse.
A what?
There's a rapper called Big L.
Yeah.
He was big in the 90s. He got shot and killed tragically in early 2000s. But he had some amazing verses. And I met Nigel and he'd never listened to rap. And he was saying to me, oh, what's the deal with it? I've never even listened to one song. And I played him this Big L song and he fucking loved it. Like, he loved it. He was like, that's amazing. Like, it's a genius. And we had this little moment of connection.
Did you say you taught him?
I taught him the rap, yeah.
What, like he rapped it back to
you? He wanted to learn it. He couldn't quite do it, but he wanted to learn it, yeah.
Nigel Owens, the famous Welsh dairy farming ex-referee.
Yeah.
Like, as Welsh as they come.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jock and Val, Prenounda,
Borada. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cardiff.
He tried to teach me this Welsh song, which was very stirring, and I couldn't do it. But it was like a nice moment, you know? And then the other thing is that I went to uni with Wayne Barnes.
What is it about you and referees?
So I know Wayne Barnes used to drink in a student union and shit.
This is good. This is a good thing. Give me more on that fucker. What else did he used to do in that student union?
Has he sent you off or something? Is there...
He has sent me off several times.
Actually. Has he?
He gave me my first red card, actually. That's bollocks. I got fucking headbutted. And I looked at him and I said... And he just looked at me like, oh, I can't do anything. And I went, fuck it. So I threw a couple of uppercuts to protect myself. It was self-defense. And he fucking red carded me, the bastard. Your next job was a cleaner at university halls. Was this whilst you were at uni?
horrific. No. I was still really like, this is what I mean about the 90s. I think there was just less checks and balances. So I was 15. I had a paid job. I had the pay slips and everything.
So your first two jobs were illegal.
I guess now, yeah, you would say that, but I think, you know, if I was a politician, I'd be saying like, oh, you know, I'd hark back to the times when kids like actually fucking got off their ass and made a living for themselves. Me and my mate Cass, I don't know how we got the job, I really don't, but it was at the University of North London on Holloway Road. So we were cleaners, there's just whole teams of cleaners cleaning out the halls of residence, like the student rooms. It was one of the most disgusting jobs I've ever had.
What was the single most disgusting thing, Ben, that you found as a cleaner of a university hall of residence?
That's pretty easy. Human shit in a wardrobe.
Hidden in the wardrobe, stashed in the wardrobe? Was it just openly in the wardrobe or in a shoebox or any attempt to disguise it?
I think sometimes when people get really fucked up and they're not in there... I think the audience can back me up on this. I think some people, not me personally, but I definitely know people, and it's happened in my house as well. Sometimes when people are really fucked up and they're not sleeping in their own homes, they can sort of semi-wake up in the middle of the night and like pee in a corner of a room or shit in a wardrobe. I think it happens. I genuinely think that happens.
No.
Yeah. No. Because there was one time I had, I'd been over in Stockholm and I met this dude and he came over to visit with his girlfriend and they stayed at my mum's house when I was still living at my mum's. And his girlfriend did it. She pissed in the wardrobe in the middle of the night and woke up while she was pissing, freaked out and destroyed the wardrobe. It was like really cheap IKEA. 100% on my life, true story.
That's quite,
I had no idea this was going on. I woke up and there was like a tension in the kitchen. And she wasn't there, and my mum was like, you need to talk to your friend.
See, I had a mate, my mate Waxy, I've told you about him before, Joe.
Okay, hang on.
Do you remember the story on the hotel managers?
Why is he called Waxy?
It's a long story. Waxy is a bit of a midnight rambler. He's the one who peed in the hotel corridor. Do you remember, had to, like an Amish farmer, had to sprinkle his seed through his boxer shorts? Anyway.
He was pissing in his hand and then chucking it around.
So... The story of this, Ben, this was a stag do, and Waxy was famous for doing these things in the middle of the night, came to in the bright lights of a hotel corridor. He knows he's left his hotel room looking for the toilet, has no idea which room he's come from, tries gently knocking, because it's the middle of the night, gently knocking on a few doors, doesn't want to bang the doors down, thinks, I'll find a toilet, runs up and down the corridor, there is no toilet, because there don't tend to be toilets in a hotel corridor. That's the point when he realises that he's going to piss himself. So his grand plan for disseminating his urine, rather than just pissing in the corner, is that he peed through the thin cotton of his boxer shorts and then just, like a medieval farmer sprinkling seed.
It's a bit like sieving flour.
Very much like sieving flour. He's then finished, been filled with a great sense of relief that his bladder is now emptied, and then realised that he still doesn't know which one his room isn't how he's going to get back in there. So he goes down to reception with the intent of asking the hotel manager for a key, and the bloke just looks at him with disgust, and he's watched the whole thing on CCTV. Oh. Just gives him a new key, slides it across. There you go, mate.
That is so Waxy.
Classic Waxy.
There's no way I'm using that as the technique. Surely you just go to the end room in the corridor and you just piss on the door.
No, ice machine.
Ice machine.
It's got the little strainer at the bottom.
What about a potted plant?
Sounds like a man of experience.
No, I would never do that. But I did. I remember I was late for a gig in Birmingham one time and I was in an NCP. And you know how when you've been driving for a long time, you immediately need a piss when you leave the car, even if you didn't feel like you needed one before. Or like when you get to your front door after a long drive, you just suddenly need a piss. It was like that, but I was in an NCP and I had a bottle of Lucozade, which has quite a wide
aperture.
Neck.
Mm.
So I went...
Stop that.
Sorry.
You don't need to say aperture.
Sorry. So I went for that. I've never pissed in a bottle before or since. Funnily enough, I just thought, it's not a big bottle of Lucozade, it's a normal bottle of Lucozade. I just assumed that that would more than house a piss. No. So I was in my car and I'd opened the door slightly so I could move my right leg outside and I was peeing into this Lucozade bottle. Then three quarters of the way, I was like, holy shit.
Was it the noise, the coo-coo-coo-coo-coo, and you thought, oh?
No, it's like you're holding it, it's getting warmer, it's getting fuller. You know you're in trouble. So I was like, fuck, fuck, fuck. And I didn't want to pee in the all over the car, so I had to get out. And I just sort of like, it was bizarre. I was in, fortunately, in the last bay, so it was in the corner. So I just went in the corner and I just sort of finished, and there was overflow. And it was all over my hand, it was horrible. And I put the bottle down, I turned around, and there was just a family parking up, getting out of the car. I just felt I'd let Britain down.
Yeah, you'd gone through all that effort and all that panic, and your cortisol's fucking racing through your body. All that effort, shouldn't you just got out and pissed in the corner?
Yeah, probably. Like, but you know how it is. Pissing in public, I really don't like it. Men, I saw two boys when I was on the dog walk yesterday. They were in the playground. They were little boys. And the playground's just like a fenced off area in the middle of this park. And they both, in unison, just stuck their todgers through the gaps in the fence and just peed out into the park as I was walking past. And, you know, they're little boys, it's fair enough, but it's a bit like, and their parents are just chill with it. I just feel like, go to a tree or something. It felt like we were breeding yet another generation of men who just like whip out their dicks and just do whatever. It does my head in.
Yeah, but that generation you'd already experienced by the guy that shit in the cupboard at university.
Yes, yes. Which, things are not getting better.
Whilst we're on that, I've got no issue with that whatsoever.
With peeing out through the fence?
No, shitting in a cupboard.
Oh. Expand.
Like, because if you're going to shit anywhere, and you it's new to you, you're a bit nervous at uni. I don't actually know what uni's like, but I presume I'd be nervous. Is it nerve-wracking?
Can be.
Okay, I'd be nervous. And then I'd be like, oh, I don't want to go to the toilet. I don't want to get judged by my poo and stuff like that.
Sure. Hang on. You think you're more likely to be judged for shitting in a toilet than in your own wardrobe?
The way that everybody poos.
Yeah,
but it's in my wardrobe. So, like, no one can judge me except the fucking cleaners when they come round, and of which I would say, don't come in here.
Never come in here.
What's your long-term plan for avoiding embarrassment here? Because are you just going to let the number of shits in your wardrobe build up? I mean, how are you moving the shits from the wardrobe to a safe location?
Okay, how do horses live? They shit all the time in their hay, and that builds up, and then someone cleans it for them. So
my dog was eating some horse shit yesterday, and I think it is as close as you can get, like sheep shit and horse shit, to just like a bit of compost. I think it's good stuff.
This is a job I've never heard of. I heard of the first two. You were a sample cutter. A sample cutter.
Yes.
At Chelsea Harbour.
This is, I'm going to say, 1997, perhaps?
Of legal age yet for a job?
Yes.
Okay, legal age.
And I got the job through a friend. So Chelsea Harbour, it must still be there because it's like a multi-million pounds development. It's like a mall down on the river, but like very high-end mall. So like just really, everything's just really posh. And I was working in this shop that basically made rugs or bought in rugs and did wall-to-wall carpeting for yachts. So Persian rugs for yachts and wall-to-wall carpeting for yachts.
But you were a sample cutter.
So I was in the back, right? Not in the showroom or anything like that. I was in the back cutting bits of carpet and bits of rug into sort of, you know, a little square tile size.
Yeah, you get that pad.
Yeah.
Flick through and you go, exactly. Oh, I want one of them.
And then, you know, I would file them in this sort of expansive, like a bookshelf for fabrics.
What for?
So people can, like, because people would buy samples or they would order samples to their house or they'd come in to get samples to see the colour and the texture. You know what samples are, right?
Yeah, like you can
get a bit of something before you buy it.
It's like a small square of a rug or a carpet.
There you go.
That you have in like a deck of different materials and colours.
Yeah.
You get to decide before you buy.
There you go.
But have you ever had anyone...
Some twat's got to cut those.
But I'm interested in how you the technique in which you use, because they were often serrated.
Yes.
So what sort of scissors do you use?
So there's no scissors. What I had was this little circular fabric saw, which is really similar to like a Bosch circular saw that you'd use for wood. Exactly the same design, but smaller. Still, you know, really fucking sharp on a cable. So I would, you know, stack up a couple bits of carpet, you know, had the measurements, and I'd just go, ksh, 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 you know, cut six squares and then file them. But if you've ever done, I mean, obviously you've always been rugby, but everybody here who's, you know, done various shit things before finding, you know, their true calling or whatever, if you've ever done menial work, it's a weird state of mind because you don't want to be there, but you have to be there. The days are long. You're doing the same thing over and over and over. So what you tend to do is you do these little mind games with yourself. So mine was like, how many can I cut at once, right? So I would stack up the offcuts of carpet and see if I could cut through a stack of six. Oof. Or a stack of seven. You know, a bit like when you're shredding paper and you're like, oh, maybe I can do six sheets. Oh, no, I can't. I fucked it. It's a bit like that, you know. Then also, there's the other thing, I've got to file them. So again, when you've got a menial task and you're on your own, do I cut six pieces, file each one, or do I cut like 100 pieces and then file 100 pieces? And then, you know what I mean? And then when do I look at the clock is a big one as well. You know that one is like, do I look? Oh, fuck, it's 9:30. Horrible. And there was one day where I was just like, I'm not filing until I've cut everything. So I was just sat there, had the radio on, and I was just... And by like 3 p.m., I was like covered in a mountain of fluff and offcuts and squares. I couldn't even see my feet. I was just covered in it. It was like...
Frenzy of sample cutting.
Yeah.
How much would this sample cost?
I've no idea. I wasn't involved in any of that. I was just like cutting man. That was it. Cutting boy. Anyway, so I'm like slicing through the piles and then there's this huge bang and everything goes dark. And I'm like, oh, that's definitely me. And I'd slice through the cable of the... Because it was like under all this stuff. I'd gone back around and sliced through it. I don't know if you've ever done that with like your lawnmower or something. It's like that. But then I heard panic and stuff outside. And I'd shorted out the whole mall. People were freaking out because, like, in the jewelry places, like, all the security was down and stuff. That was my last day.
Yeah. By the sounds of it, I think you were happy that that was your last day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in those days, it's like, you know, when you're sort of young and fancy-free, you're not really thinking about... It wasn't like I was there going, one day I'm going to be the greatest comedian ever. I had no plans to get into comedy or anything like that. I was just like job to job until maybe I'll find a job I like. I didn't really think about the future when I was younger. So I think that's probably the same for a lot of people. Oh, I got to tell you, at the university, what we used to do, because it's the same thing like how you find fun or how you pass the time. One of me and Cass's jobs, we'd have to strip the beds. And you take the dirty laundry down to the basement. It was one long corridor, and at one end is all the clean linen that comes in from the big laundries, and then the other end is where you dump all the dirty linen. And you have those big, you know, those big cage things on wheels, like big trolleys, to collect all the linen. We'd get that down in the lift, we'd dump it all in the dirty laundry room, and then one of us would get in the cage, right? And the other one would go down, open up the double doors to the clean laundry room where all the clean laundry was like stacked up or chucked in because we'd have to fold it and stuff. It'd all be there, but like fresh and warm and smells so nice. And he'd wedge open the double doors and there's like a threshold just right there, like that was raised. Then they'd come back and then he'd push me or I'd push Cass, pick up a head of steam till you're going really fast, the end of the corridor, then it would hit the threshold and you'd fly out through the doors into the clean laundry and just like, ah. Oh.
Beautiful.
Oh. Like photocopies on your face. Oh. We're 15.
The pleasure in your face there.
That was great.
At the smell of being surrounded by this fresh cotton, which is basically just, you've cleaned well, you've had to probably clean a fair amount of shit because they probably use the sheets to wipe their arse and thing. And the amount of semen that is you've just landed in.
He's landing in the fresh stuff, not the dirty ones.
No, we dump the dirty stuff and then jump in the fresh stuff.
There's no semen issues here, unless I'm mistaken.
Well,
no.
Did you? Well, I think you should, maybe the other way round would have also been a good laugh.
See, I don't know anything about rugby, but this is the type of shit that I imagine rugby players do, like jump in like huge piles of semen-stained sheets.
For the record, I have never jumped in any semen.
Your own?
I don't do that. So your next job was...
Let's move on.
This one's good. An intern at a paparazzi agency.
Ooh. This was an amazing job.
Amazing right, so job. Like a proper, like, paparazzi with the...
Yeah, it was an agency that represented paparazzo and sold their... So they had editors there who would sell their photos to the tabloids. And I got this job through the job centre in Edgware Road. I was still a teenager, so it was just literally like making coffee and buying cigarettes for the boss and his wife who they co-ran it. It's called London Features International. It was eye-opening, man. What a crazy place to work.
Eye-opening bad?
I mean, I kind of enjoyed the job because it was zero responsibilities, buying cigarettes, making coffee, and I spent most of my time in the dark room downstairs, this huge dark room where they develop the photos. Bear in mind now, this is like 1998. So, you know, this is pre-digital. Like, they're printing out photos. They're faxing stuff back and forth, agreeing which photos to use, you know. So I'd spend a lot of time in the dark room because another of my jobs was filing a lot of these photos. And you just see, like, amazing shots, like, from the 60s up until, like, 98. Do you know what I mean? Of everybody and everything. You know, just all big events in the UK and America mostly, and then celebrities you've forgotten about, actors, singers, all sorts. And raunchy stuff as well. There's lots of raunchy stuff.
When you say raunchy, like, I'm thinking of MPs doing, like, dirty shit with maybe, bondage.
Not so much that. There might be, like, a few sort of awkward situations that they've sort of kept on file just in case. But mostly it was just, I don't know, boobs.
Yeah. Just straightforward boobs.
Just people's boobs.
Mm. This is quite a heady period in the paparazzi world, isn't it? The late 90s. Ben, so in my head, I'm seeing pictures of Liam Gallagher staggering out of a nightclub. He's got Natalie Appleton on his arm.
Exactly that vibe. Yeah.
I don't think... the only thing I've got with paparazzi is, like, quite negative, isn't paparazzi?
Oh, no, it was all negative. Like, they were horrible people. Oh. You know, they waddle in, these guys, right? They waddle in, like, barely hanging down, smoking, and everyone's smoking. Because people forget that, right? If you're of a certain vintage, like me... You still remember where you just smoked everywhere. Everybody smoked everywhere. You got a newborn baby, like, just blow it in their fucking face. That's how it was. And that place, like, they'd all come in, like, chuffing away. Oh, who needs, like, Madonna's snatch through the ages? Do you know what I mean? It was that kind of vibe. It was horrible. They were horrible people. And the bosses, everybody, it was just gross.
Who was that bloke who did some of the celebrity stuff? Darren someone. What was it? Do you remember him with the pink Mohican?
I've
do you remember
just got
him?
Caught with Madonna's snatch.
Through the ages.
Through the ages. His name was Darren Lyon. He was on Celebrity Big Brother. And he had a pink mohawk. He was a piece of... Is he here? He's definitely not here. He was a piece of shit, basically. Like, it was awful. Just trying to get everyone up. But he had a fantastic lid on him, like the way he did with his hair. And he had abs.
Ooh.
Yeah, like, he didn't have that gut, but they were fake abs.
What?
It was the first time that I heard that you can get abs implanted, regardless of what's going on here.
What are they made out of?
Well, I guess like silicon. Or like concrete or something like that, just to make it like thing. So I think there's hope that I'm going to get some abs soon.
Now, you had a job, Ben, which, when we've been doing this show, comes up more than any other job, and that was working in Next.
This can't be true. Every guest we've had on has worked in Next.
Oh, I used to work in Next. There's one in every town, that's the thing, isn't it?
They're everywhere, and also, like, I remember a period where if you couldn't get a job anywhere else, you just type up your CV, print it off, and then you just walk down Oxford Street and just go to every shop and go, are you hiring? Yes or no? And if they are, then you go for it. And Next was one of the... No, Gap was one of the ones that said, yes, they're hiring first. And I interviewed there. And the first question they asked me was, do you consider yourself good looking? And I was like, fuck this place. That's messed up, isn't it?
That was the opening question.
Yeah, do you consider yourself good looking?
And if I was to role play that scenario, and hello, Ben, thank you for your CV. Do you consider yourself good looking? What would your answer be?
I was like, why are you asking me that? That's what I said, why are you asking me that? And they did that same fucking face. And I thought, I'm not working for this guy.
It's our policy to ask, Ben.
No, what they said was that they consider certain people for the front of house role. And I just thought, this is gross.
On the basis that they fancy themselves rather than anything else?
I guess, who knows?
So we went to Next, we're happy with how you looked?
Yeah, I think Next is a little lower in the pecking order. I don't think people need to be attractive to work at Next.
No.
My experience.
What was your department? Because I was children home furnishings.
I started in shoes, mate.
Did you?
The shoes, yeah. Oh, mate, yeah, shoes. Nailed it. No, I fucking hated retail more than any other job I've ever had in my life. Because you've got two bosses. You got your boss, and then you've got the public. They are sort of like your boss. You can't just be like, fuck you. Do you know what I mean? You can't. And they're going to be riding you all day, you know? When your boss isn't riding you, the public be riding you. I hated it. So as soon as I could, I switched from shoes because my floor manager used to go, you're never going to make senior sales with that attitude. Ben, never going to make senior sales. I don't fucking make senior sales. I'm not going to be here when I'm senior. Yeah, your fucking mind. So I went into, what do they call it? Replenishment. So you're in
outback.
You're out back in the warehouse. It's my natural habitat. Do you know what I mean? Behind the scenes. And you're like getting all the stock that's, you know, running out on the floor and then you bring it out. And also you didn't have to wear a suit because if you work at Next, you got to wear a suit.
What?
Yeah.
You have to wear a suit.
I don't know if it's still like that. I haven't been in there since the 90s, but that's how it was. I hated it.
I fucking hate suits.
Yeah, it's the worst, right?
I'm not going to work at Next. I ain't working at Next.
And it's a Next suit as well, so it's worse than just a suit.
Hang on. I think they do machine washable suits, though.
They probably do.
That's a good option.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have more than one, so it must have been machine washable. But okay. Yeah, in the warehouse, you didn't have to wear one, so you could just pop out every now and again. And of course, in the warehouse as well, you're with, like, it's a different breed of people. So on the floor, it's all people who want to be doing something else. They got aspirations, and there's a lot of bitterness on the floor. Whereas in the warehouse, it was mainly, like, new migrants. You know, a lot of people couldn't speak English. Everyone was just, like, happy to have a job. And the vibe was way better. And you could have the radio on, listen to Talk Sport, or listen to some music. Whereas on the floor, there's a tape that plays.
This was the killer for me, because I used to work
this
at Christmas.
And
it killed Christmas music forever. The same 20 Christmas songs, Ben.
So I had no idea.
All year round.
Hey.
That really would kill you.
That would fuck everyone up.
That really would kill you. No, but, it was the Lighthouse family that turned me. That pushed me
over
the edge.
Ocean Drive or Lifted?
It's the one that goes, in the sky, so blue, sun's gonna
Ocean
shine
Drive.
On everything you do. Is that what it's called?
Possibly. They were the least soulful so-called soul band
Awful.
Of all time.
Yeah, that song pushed me over the edge.
You were sacked, Ben, quote, in spectacular fashion. What was the story there?
It's related to, what are they called?
Lighthouse Family.
Lighthouse Family. It's related to them. Because I'd been there for 6 months or something, and tape was going round and round. I'd moved from the floor to replenishment, thank God. And occasionally I'd have to come in and fill on the floor, and it's that same tape still be going round as well. God, don't miss this. And because I was quite mouthy, the floor manager had asked me to do the announcements at the end of the day. So I've been doing a lot of replenishment and then the announcements at the end where you're like, ladies and gents, it's 5 minutes before we close. Please take your purchases to the register and thank you for shopping at Next. It was getting towards that point wherever it was. I mean, now it's like beginning of August or something, but it was when they start doing the Christmas stuff, right? So like end of October or something. And the floor manager's like, oh, can you go and put on the Christmas tape? And I was like, oh, there's a Christmas tape. This is exciting, you know. I went into the room and he told me it's in the drawer underneath the microphone where I do the announcements. I pulled open the drawer and there was like 20 tapes in there. And I just fucking lost it, man. I lost it. Because it's probably all more terrible music. But the fact that there was like 20 plus tapes and I'd been there 6 months and they'd been playing the same tape all day long, every day. I just thought, it's like, I found it like unfathomably cruel to the staff. Do you know what I mean? I just thought that's so fucking cruel. Just put a different tape on. We're dying out here, right? And I put on the Christmas tape. I was absolutely seething. I was seething. When I got on the mic for the last 5 minutes, I said, ladies and gentlemen, the store will be closing in 5 minutes. So if you do have any purchases, please just drop them to the ground and stamp on them. Because at the end of the day, they're created by child slaves in Bangladesh. The process is incredibly brutal. And none of us should really own any clothes like this anyway. Should probably all buy secondhand. So I would walk out and maybe go to the nearest charity shop. And as I'm doing this speech, George, my floor manager, comes in. I'll never forget this. He goes, you are finished. You're finished. Like that. Like a Succession or something. And it's Wall Street. You're finished. You'll never work in this town again. I'm like, bro, I've already quit, man. Do you know what I mean? I don't need to hand in my resignation. I'm out. It's the most rock and roll thing I've ever done in my life.
That. Look, it's been brilliant hearing about all the things that you did do. But what are you up to now, apart from being a star comedian?
I potter about. I basically just do whatever the fuck I want. And it's really probably linked to those early years of doing jobs. I just thought, no, 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 no. And then got to a stage where I was like, what happens if you just do whatever the fuck you want? What happens?
And now
do you get in trouble? No, you don't.
And now
I might have an issue with Next, but.
And now you're an ex comedian.
It's very slick.
And usually, what happens when people retire from their previous job, they just start up fucking podcasts and do this shit.
Yep.
Tell me you've done that as well.
I've done exactly that.
Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
I have a podcast called Shrink the Box. I'm about to launch the second series. It's basically me and a psychotherapist psychoanalyzing iconic characters from TV history. So we started the first season with Tony Soprano, obviously, because it's got that meta angle of him actually being head shrunk on the show. It's sort of grown and grown. The new series that's about to start in April, I'm immensely proud of it. It's way better than the first one. We got a new psychotherapist. She's absolutely amazing, Namone Metaxas. And it gets pretty deep, man. And it's free therapy for me, which is excellent. Just like, hey, a friend of mine went through some shit. You know what I mean? I do it on every show.
Amazing. You've been brilliant. So,
thank
ladies
you.
And gents, please put your hands together for Doc Brown, please.
Thank you.
Nice man, Doc Brown. Joe, I like Doc Brown a lot. I liked his chat. I also liked the shirt that he got from the vintage shop.
His gears were like smooth.
When we first met him pre-show, he was wearing the nattiest of titfers and also a tit-for-tat hat and also an absolute darling of an overcoat.
I don't know how to respond to the language in which you've just used to describe Doc Brown's get-up. Really good use of the word darling.
Joe, we should remind anyone listening to this that we are at the Clapham Grand every single month.
Only once.
In each month, with a double bill of big name comedians telling us stuff they may never have told anyone else before. Our next date, Joe, is in April and it is the 16th. We shall see you then.
When's our next date?
April the 16th. in the year of our Lord 2024.
Which Lord?
Whichever Lord you choose to have lording over you.
Oh, good Lord. Goodbye.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.
Sports Social Podcast Network.